So it's somebody I was reading somebody this morning said, Trump kind of threw a grenade into the world economy and is going to see what happens. I mean, I don't know. It's a tough thing to call. The structure of the world where, we printed money and shipped it out to other people, and they made cheap goods and sold them to us and accepted the money. It's clearly we've reached the end of that rope. I mean, just the mathematics of the debt problem are so large that we've reached the end of that rope. And I think what Trump and Bessent are hoping is that they can disrupt that and put a brief end or an end to globalism, or at least try and restore fair trade, which we really haven't had for 40 years. I mean, it's unfair that we have a disadvantage as a result of being a reserve currency, having a strong dollar. Our manufacturers and producers can't or don't sell as much overseas. And Trump and Bessent have rightly recognized that the U.S. consumer base is a big important market, and we shouldn't just necessarily let people access it for free, because the tariff really isn't the 60%. That's really the amount of the deficit, reflected in the form of a tariff, correct? I mean, what it would take to correct it. So there's a little bit of sleight of hand, a little bit of branding, and a little bit of, just spin on the part of the Trump administration to make it look like, hey, these guys are treating us unfairly, and we're going to show how magnificent we are. We're not going to treat them entirely unfairly, but we're going to treat them half as unfairly as they've treated us. And so, okay, I mean, that's fine. And I think, to the average American who doesn't really dig into it, that's a pretty compelling pitch. I know in talking to other investors this morning, their kind of thought was, well, he's just playing chess and he'll back off of this, and this isn't serious, and the markets are going to be okay. And I'm not so sanguine. I think this might be the pin that burst the stock market bubble, and I do believe the stock market is in a bubble. So, it's kind of put on your helmet and cover your head time, and at least in equities, in my view, because tariffs, I mean, we saw in Smoot-Hawley and the Great, Depression and other times, tariffs are very, very demand dampening, recessionary, et cetera. And they're like a tax, and effectively they're inflationary because they'll make everything that we buy from overseas cost more. I think Americans can endure pain and change. I mean, we've obviously endured it for our whole history of the country, but we endure it much better when we think it's fair. You know what I mean? And we understand the plan. I mean, if you think about what they went through in World War II, my grandparents told me about it. I mean, there was severe rationing, and there wasn't enough gasoline, there wasn't enough, food. I mean, you couldn't get meat easily unless you wanted to buy it on the black market and so forth. And yet the country pulled together, realizing that if they didn't do it, they were going to lose to fascism, and they didn't want to do that. Americans can do great things, but they need to feel, the fundamental problem that started this whole fourth turning was the unfairness of the bailouts in 2008. Yeah, it's going to be chaotic, sadly. And but look, if you read the book, if you do the work, you've done the work, you're a Bitcoiner. If you come to understand the system as it is, and you understand where we're going in the system and how the technology is taking us there, you eventually, I think, get to a point where you can be very calm and serene and comfortable that you're going to be okay.
All right, welcome back to the Theia podcast. I am back with Lawrence Lepard. He is a managing partner at Equity Management Associates and, of course, author of the brand new best-selling book, The Big Print.
I'm not
Lawrence,
sure
great
it's
to talk to
best-selling
you.
yet. It's going okay. I think we got a ways to become a bestseller. But yeah, it's nice to be with you, Joe. I always enjoy our conversations when I see it shows and stuff. So,
Absolutely. Yeah, no,
all right.
good to chat with you again. Last time I saw you a couple months ago, it was, I think, after Trump had been, or just before Trump had been elected. Now, obviously, Trump's been elected, nearly 100 days in office. And you and I were speaking a little bit before we kicked off here. And you said that, there's no shortage of excitement in the markets today. And the latest form of excitement, we'll call it, came yesterday when we got what Trump called Liberation Day, which was basically the suite, rather, of reciprocal tariffs on basically every country around the world. Notable omissions were Canada, Mexico, and Russia. They did not receive any kind of tariffs whatsoever. But some of the big hitters here, right? If you take a look at the entire list, we have China, Vietnam. I believe we're tariffing, Vietnam something like 45% or 90%. Massive list here, right? We have China, 34%. European Union 20%, Vietnam 46%, massive. And of course, one of the major ones, Taiwan, they're a chip exporter, 32%. So, what do you make of all of this? What do you make of the chaos here and the market's reaction? Because they clearly don't like what's going on.
Oh, the stock market doesn't like it, and the stock market's very overvalued and vulnerable anyway. So it's somebody I was reading somebody this morning said, Trump kind of threw a grenade into the world economy and is going to see what happens. I mean, I don't know. It's a tough thing to call. the structure of the world where, we printed money and shipped it out to other people, and they made cheap goods and sold them to us and accepted the money. It's clearly we've reached the end of that rope. I mean, just the mathematics of the debt problem are so large that we've reached the end of that rope. And I think what Trump and Bessent are hoping is that they can disrupt that and, put a brief end or an end to globalism, or at least try and restore fair trade, which we really haven't had for, 40 years. So, I mean, it's unfair that, we have a disadvantage as a result of being the reserve currency, having a strong dollar. Our manufacturers and producers can't or don't sell as much overseas as, and, Trump and Bessent have rightly recognized that the U.S. consumer base is a, big, important market, and we shouldn't just necessarily let people access it for free. That, and there's a cost to doing so. I mean, the cost is that, as we saw in COVID, we didn't have enough medical supplies, because we've, as we've seen kind of in this war in Russia, we haven't been able to send enough shells and missiles and so forth. So, and this is all because, the manufacturing base of the U.S. is hollowed out. And so he's thrown a real, he's put a real flag in the sand, and he's thrown a kind of a grenade into the economy and saying, we're going to change this. And, that's, I have to say, on balance, I generally speaking agree with it. I'm not sure, I don't believe that Bessent or he really fully understand all the implications. I'm not sure anybody can. But my sense is this is going to be just more than just a little bit disruptive. I know in talking to other investors this morning, their kind of thought was, well, he's just playing chess and he'll back off of this, and this isn't serious, and the markets are going to be okay. And I'm not so sanguine. I think this might be the pin that burst the stock market bubble, and I do believe the stock market is in a bubble. So, it's kind of put on your helmet and cover your head time, and at least in equities, in my view, because tariffs, I mean, we saw in Smoot-Hawley and the Great, Depression and other times, tariffs are very, very demand dampening, recessionary, et cetera. And they're like a tax, and effectively they're inflationary because they'll make everything that we buy from overseas cost more. So, I get it. I get the strategy of trying to bring manufacturing back to the United States, and I applaud that. But I don't think, I don't think this isn't easy. I mean, we're ripping off a really big band-aid, and it's going to hurt. That's kind of the way I look at it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you can take a look and do a million different scenario analysis, but the reality is there's never been a country in history that is as large of a global superpower in terms of its economic might as the United States, that has then basically done a complete 180 in the way that it funds itself, and it conducts global trade in an effort to change the way that it funds itself. Moving basically from this kind of this handshake, we're the good guy policy, where everybody is basically, charging us out the rear end, not only through explicit tariffs but also through currency manipulation, toward the United States, where we basically just accept that and say, that's okay, whatever. You could charge us a lot of money. We have, a lot of missiles and guns and tanks, and we're still the world's military superpower, even if we're getting ripped off by every economy. Now we're doing a total 180. Instead of trying to fund ourselves with income tax, Trump is taking the President McKinley plan very seriously. He wants to fund the entire United States government using tariffs, and obviously U.S. treasuries, and eliminate the income tax. It's a bold move.
Really is.
The U.S. was in a place, a couple, 100 some odd years ago where we were doing this. It's a total different reality now, though, right? The world is much more interconnected, as you said. This kind of was the first, I described this in my tweet as like the first shot, in the war to end globalism. Like, this is the great American reshoring effort. Nothing on this scale has been attempted before. I don't know if you could move basically from one funding source, being the income tax, to another funding source, being basically a total reshaping of the way you conduct global trade. And there won't be some volatility there. And so I said the medicine doesn't taste good. I posted a
I think
picture of
that's
the stock
correct.
market, and it seems like the market's rejecting the medicine here. Do you believe that that's at all possible, Trump's plan to change this up, given the size and interconnectedness of the U.S. economy? And then
Well,
I have a follow-up question about Scott Bessent.
yeah, I mean, look, it's at the margin, right? I mean, so this globalist system got built up, post World War II, and really accelerated post 71 when we abandoned the gold standard, and really, the U.S. became a financial country, not a manufacturing country. That's a lot of years to build something up. Trump's in office for 4 years, and so you don't reverse that big a trend that's that entrenched, in a short period of time. But at the margin, you can turn the tiller on the ship and the ship will start to turn and people will start to reshore and so on and so forth. I mean, as a practical matter, there are things that are bought overseas or produced overseas that are produced with very low cost wages. And, Americans aren't going to want to match those wages. So, I mean, you go back to classic Ricardian, comparative advantage. If a country has low cost wages and wants to sell their goods for a low cost, and the country has, a higher wage base and wants to buy them, they should both win. I think the problem, I think what Trump's trying to point out and what he's reacting to is really back to the more the monetary problem of having the world's reserve currency and Triffin's dilemma. And so as a result of, it's one thing if, each country does what they're comparatively better at. It's another thing if they do what they're comparatively better at, and one country has the reserve currency, so they have to run deficits to keep the whole thing going. And so as my book points out, if we were to go to a neutral reserve currency, which I think we are in the process of doing, which I think will naturally happen, then we can get back to a low tariff world and, low wage countries will produce low wage stuff, and that's okay. It's the currency piece that, in my view, has caused so much of the damage and the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is the currency component, and I hope that the people that Trump has surrounded him with understand that. We have Scopas sent recently who said something about, I think it was 1 year ago, 2 years ago. He was basically
Last
at
summer, we're New Bretton Woods, and I want to be there.
he said something about a great economic reordering is necessary in the United States in the coming years or something like that. And it seems like that's what's going on now. Basically, everyone that Trump has surrounded him with is kind of taking this devil may care attitude about, the Mag-7. They really don't care. I think Bessent said yesterday or the day before, this is a Mag-7 pro like the Mag-7 sell-off is a Mag-7 problem, not a MAGA problem or something like that. And so basically, the administration is kind of telling American companies in a sense that, although they drive spending, right? Although the stock market going up enables a wealth effect to kick in, it drives people to spend money. Although that is the case, we're giving the US economy its medicine right now. There's a huge currency problem here that we have to fix. And so this is going to hurt for a little while before we step in. We know Powell's still in office. We know that the Fed does not like when the stock market goes down. It's kind of its shadow mandate to prop up the stock market in a way, because a perpetually rising stock market means people feel wealthy on paper, and so they go out and spend money on things. And so it helps the economy in addition to its two other functions. So, I suppose, do you believe that their target is to achieve this great economic reordering, and shift potentially, to a more neutral reserve currency, in your book
I
that is
do.
Bitcoin?
I do. I think they know that's the case. I mean, they moved forward with a strategic Bitcoin reserve. They haven't agreed to purchase any in addition to what they hold. Bessent is clearly a smart guy and clearly gets it. And yes, he said, there's a Bretton Woods that's necessary and I want to be at the table. So that's where they're trying to move us. They're trying to push us in that direction and doing a lot of admirable things. I mean, Doge was an admirable effort. In my opinion, it's too little too late. The problem's too acute. But, I think the answer is yes. They are trying to take us to a better place, and that's where we should be going. But as you said, medicine doesn't taste good. And so, and they're going to have to get better at their messaging because, the Democrats have already started saying, look at what Trump's doing. He's blowing up the stock market, and there goes the value of your 401k. And furthermore, if all these tariffs come in, goods are going to be more expensive and inflation's going to be a problem. So he's got to do a better job of pointing out that he inherited a very broken situation. He's trying to, at first principles level, fix it. But the fix isn't going to just happen overnight. And there's going to be bad tasting medicine that we are all going to have to take as we adjust. But I think, he's rightly pointed out, if you think about who elected him, you think about who owns stocks. I mean, stocks are owned. Well, 92% of the wealth in this country is owned by the top 1%. And the balance of the stock market is owned probably by the top 20%. And the middle 50% and lower probably don't own any stocks. So their view is, oh, hey, if all these stocks go down, it doesn't bother me. And that's a correct view until all these stocks go down, we enter a recession, the companies decide to start cutting back employment, and they start losing their jobs. And so it does affect them. It affects them with a lag. But yeah, it's very clear though that the policies that existed pre-Trump were very much elitist policies designed to financialize the economy and reward the top 1 to 10%. They didn't care much about what happened to the balance of the country. And Trump was elected by the balance of the country and is trying to fulfill his mandate to do things that are in their best interest. And I think he's doing that. I think he will continue to do that. But I think even he doesn't know exactly what's in their best interest. There are going to be, unexpected consequences of what he's doing. I mean, as an example, I respect Scott Bessent. I think he's a smart guy. But I think he is naive about how disruptive this is going to be. I have a lot of friends and others I've talked to who are like, well, as I said, these tariffs will be pulled back. This isn't a bad thing, et cetera, et cetera. It's all going to be okay. I guess if I look at when I look at a stock, when I look at any market, I try and look at it and kind of say, what's the thing that everyone believes to be true, but maybe it's not true? Because if that's how you gain an advantage, right? And you think, and then if you're correct and you bet against it, well, you get paid for seeing something before everybody else does. And I would say the thing in my mind in the world today, there are two things that I think a lot of people believe to be true that I think are untrue. I think one, a lot of people believe that the bond market will be okay, that inflation is being tamed, that we will ultimately get back to our 2%. And that COVID was just kind of a one-off example in a very long deflationary slide. And so, don't worry, things are going to be better on the inflation front. I strongly disagree with that. And my book talks about it. The second thing that I think a lot of people believe to be true that's not true is that the stock market always goes up and that, it provides you with great rewards and you've got to buy the dip. And because frankly, since 08, that's worked. With a couple of pretty severe dips, but it's worked. And if you look at the stock valuations today, that the work that John Hussman's done, I put the charts in my book. We are at a valuation level, overall valuation level in the stock market that puts us higher than 2000, higher than 1929. Both of those cases, I mean, in 2000, NASDAQ went down 80%. In 29, the S&P went down, or Dow went down 80%. And even in 2000, the NASDAQ went down 50%. And so I see the stock market as being very vulnerable. And when you start, making moves like they've made in terms of, these tariffs, I mean, this is like playing Jenga, right? You've got this big tower and you're pulling out blocks. And, I'm not sure which one is going to cause the whole thing to fall over, but I'm nervous. So a lot of people are like, well, the stock market just correct 10% and everything will be fine. I don't see it that way. I think the stock market is in trouble because I think, the reason, let's examine just for a moment, if you'll indulge me, how the stock market got to this point of view. We had 0% interest rates from 08 to 15, and then we had 0% interest rates from 19 to 22. And when you have 0% interest rates, that means basically borrowing money is free. And so what do financial operators do? What do quintillionaires do? PE people, hedge fund people, Wall Street people. They borrow low-cost money and they invest it in stocks and carry things that have a carried yield that will go up in value. And that's how they benefit from the financial inflation that's taking place. But the problem with that is it leads to those assets getting extremely overvalued. And it also leads to, in most of those cases, there was QE going on, so and credit expansion through the banks. So the money supply was getting larger. So it also leads to underlying inflation. And the average working person, they don't see their wages go up, but they see the cost of groceries going up. And so therein lies the problem, and that's what Trump's trying to address. And one could argue that some of what he's doing is really right, and I could also argue some of it's a little bit clumsy, but at least he's making an effort. So I give him a good grade for making an effort, and I think it's going to be messy, and hopefully he'll have smart enough people around him to adjust it as he goes forward.
Yep, absolutely. I think that the wording I've heard, I haven't heard it explicitly from the Trump administration, because I think that saying this would probably be cause for the American people to like move for an impeachment. But I think that like the plan, judging by what they've said they want to do, is short-term pain for long-term gain. That
I think
might be an
that,
oversimplification.
no, I think that's right.
Yeah. And
I
so
mean, like Reagan, I mean, I think they've studied other presidential terms and they know that, if you're going to have things go bad, you want to have them go bad right now. He's just been elected. There's not a midterm for another 2 years. There's not another presidential for 4 years. So, if you're going to have some pain, take it now. And then hopefully you're on the upswing in the recovery and your programs have worked when, the next time the voters get to weigh in on you. And so, yes, I think it's very clear that's what they're doing.
phenomenal. It seems like he's learning from his mistakes the first time around. He
I
knows know what he needs to do, and he's
yeah.
moved very quickly
Oh
because,
yeah.
he knows he's very unpopular, right? But
Well,
what
with some
happened to him
people, I
last
mean,
summer could
he's
happen
not
again.
yeah, he's
Yeah.
not entirely unpopular. He's just unpopular with the left.
And it's a type of, toxic hatred
Oh yeah.
towards him. And so, it's kind of very like we're at this the two political camps in America, cultural camps, have never been more polarized. And that's something that's thrown around constantly. But now it seems more so on the left. It seems like the right has gotten what they wanted, but the left is still, you know, fueled by this vehement hatred. I wonder if this process, this kind of great economic reordering will continue to worsen ties, or if, you know, between kind of, you know, people and their neighbors in the country. Or I wonder if, you know, through ripping the Band-Aid off, however many, you know, months or years it takes for, you know, this economic and monetary reset to kick in, and then the reality that we're now funded by tariffs, the income tax is almost completely eliminated, other taxes have been severely reduced. I wonder if in that future, relations between us and our neighbors improve, because you and I both know one of the huge reasons behind, you know, kind of this vitriolic divide and hatred between the left and the right, basically just us and our neighbors, us and other people, is because of what's happening with the money. One camp believes that the solution to the problem we're having with money, which nobody can point out, on the left, they think it's because of greedy corporations and we need to get rid of CEOs. And then on the right, you know, we think it's because of, you know, let's say, you know, greedy countries or taxes or whatever. The overarching problem that causes all of this, that causes, you just mentioned the quintillionaires, to earn a lot of money, you know, while the people who don't own assets become, you know, extremely poor, is because of the money printer. I wonder if, as a function of basically Trump's strategy of saying, what's the nation's trade deficit? What are their exports to us? Put the, you know, divide one by the other. That's how much they're paying us. I wonder if in this effort to eliminate the deficit and thereby eliminate the amount of deficit spending we need to do in the US, that will fix this great cultural divide we have, because it'll fix the money.
Well, I think so. I mean, I hope so. I mean, and in a way, you kind of just summarized the theme of my book, which is that, you know, and it's what led me to write the book. You know, blue team and red team were arguing, and they were arguing about a bunch of stuff that didn't matter, in my opinion, and they all missed the bigger issue that you and I understand, which is that the money's broken. That's the real problem. You know, we had a presidential debate, and, you know, the deficits and the debt were never discussed, and yet I would submit they're the largest problem in the country right now. Yeah, I mean, look, to bring the two sides together, I think we do need to fix the money. I'm not as hopeful, maybe, as I think I heard you being, that, you know, things will get solved in the next 4 years and we'll, you know, we'll move toward that fixing of the money kind of, you know, linearly and naturally, and it'll get fixed and everything will be okay. I hope for that outcome. I pray for that. That would be a really great outcome. But I worry, based on looking at history and how things have happened in the past and other countries that have behaved the way that we've behaved, you know, it's going to be rather more chaotic, you know, it's going to involve high inflation, and, you know, it's going to involve, you know, perhaps a real serious downturn and a lot of liquidation of overpriced assets. And that's not necessarily going to help with the social fabric. The social fabric gets wrecked when the dot-com bubble burst, a lot of people got hurt. When the housing bubble burst, a lot of people got hurt. You know, when COVID came along, a lot of people got hurt. I don't know that we can just, you know, casually and linearly and intelligently transition to sound money. I'd like to think that we can. I think if the government policymakers were smart enough, we could. I mean, there's a chapter in the book called, you know, Policy Responses, and I actually drafted, you know, the speech that I would give if I were president of the United States. And so it's an interesting, you know, view. I'm basically trying to say what Keynes has been doing. You know, the Keynesian model is wrong. It's broken. We've got to return to sound money. So, you know, I believe, Joe, that we will get to sound money one way or another. But that I have high level of confidence in, because people tend to trend towards the best solution over time, even though everyone doesn't get it in the beginning. What I have a lot of trouble with is predicting the path from where we are right now to that end point. I think it's going to be up, down, sideways. And honestly, I mean, Trump could maybe make a lot of progress here, but if it's not enough, in 4 years, blue team might win, because the voters, I mean, we're in a fourth turning where all the rules are changing. And all the rules are changing, particularly around the monetary system, which was flawed and built up on Keynesianism. And, you know, when all the rules are changing and things are tough, you know, it's not uncommon for voters to, you know, just to pick the other side, you know, okay. You know, so as much progress as Trump makes, it might not be enough. And in 4 years, screw that. That's not working well enough. We want blue team back, you know. And so they'll elect blue team, and blue team will come in and they'll demonize sound money people and they'll tax the shit out of everybody. And, you know, I mean, we could bounce back and forth between these kind of two extremes for a little while until we sort it all out. Now, that's another reason why I wrote the book, was because I want, the book is written at a level where Elaine, it's got a lot of interesting information in it, and it's not lightweight in terms of talking about the theory, but I've really tried to make it very understandable to a layman, so that an American who has a blue collar job, any job, doesn't and never has studied economics, doesn't have a college degree, none of that stuff, just a regular American can read it and go, oh, I kind of get it. I see what's wrong. I see the underlying flaw in the system. I mean, I think average Americans are suffering from inflation. And yeah, they're being gaslit by the left, who says it's greedy corporations, but they know something's wrong. They can't put their finger on it, right? And so the book tries to address that, tries to show, look, this is what's wrong. It's very clearly wrong. Here's why it's wrong. Here's how it got wrong. Oh, and that's the first half of the book. This is the problem. The second half of the book is, but there are ways we can fight back, and things are getting better, and don't be depressed, because it's going to, your kids are going to live in a much better world as we return to the sound money system, and it's emerging right now, in the form of Bitcoin. So, that's kind of the messaging of the book. And, I think what you and I and everyone is going to struggle with for the next 10 years are, riding the zigzags and the ups and downs and everything else. I mean, it's not every day that you see, I'm looking at the stock market right now, it's down 3.8%. I mean, in one day, that's a pretty significant move.
Yeah, we've got the stock market down 3.8%, Bitcoin down 4.5%, MicroStrategy down 6%. We also have the 10-year yield down 11 bips, the 2-year yield down 15 bips. We had a few economic prints this morning that all missed expectations. So yeah, it's chaotic.
Yeah, it's going to be chaotic, sadly. But look, if you read the book, if you do the work, you've done the work, you're a Bitcoiner. If you come to understand the system as it is, and you understand where we're going in the system and how the technology is taking us there, you eventually, I think, get to a point where you can be very calm and serene and comfortable that you're going to be okay. Because I have, a huge portion of my investable assets in Bitcoin, over half, well over half. And I just know that, Bitcoin is going to continue to be adopted. And I strongly believe the price is going to go up many multiples of where it is today. And that as a result of that, I will be financially comfortable. And that's all I really want. I mean, I'm not into this. I don't want to be silly rich. I just want to be financially comfortable. And, you're young. You've got a whole career in front of you. I'm older. I don't. And when you get older, what you want to do is you want to make sure you don't outlive your money. I want to live to be 90. I'm 67, so I'll slow down on my work life in the next few years, in 5 years or something. And I want to make sure that what I've saved up is enough to support me through all those years. And in the old system, that was a very hard thing to do. I watched my father suffer with it. He had some money when he retired, but by the time he passed, it had really dwindled away. And that's because inflation just eats away at your savings if you're in a non-sound money environment, a fiat-based environment. And that's why, you and I and so many others advocate for people to have their savings in the soundest money ever created, Bitcoin. And if you don't like the volatility there, gold's not a bad second choice.
Fantastic. And that was a phenomenal, basically, the question I asked is answered by your book, right? So this big question of what happened, what's going to happen next, how can we fix this? It's answered by your book. And I love that it's written for the layman, particularly, as you mentioned, because we need more books like that. Too often, when someone thinks, I'm going to write a financial book, they try to pack it with as much complex terminology and jargon as they can. And then it's only accessible to people who have these types of jobs and are already in the know. But
Exactly.
creating a book that's accessible, that has a great title, that has an interesting cover.
And I'm telling a story, and people listen to stories, they watch stories on TV. They don't sit around and read textbooks, and so
That's right.
story is what kind of keeps you going with it as well. It helps a little bit, so
Absolutely.
yeah, I mean,
Phenomenal.
that's how I'm going to measure the success, Joe. I mean, as you know, Bitcoiners like it because, it's positive on Bitcoin. But what really gets me excited is when somebody says, hey, I gave this to my friend who hates Bitcoin, or I gave this to my friend who doesn't really know anything about money, and they read it and now they get it. And I'm like, wow, great. That's hitting the target for me. You know what I mean?
Exactly. One thing I am doing is I'm going to buy a bunch of copies of your book as well as a bunch of copies of Nick's book and then give them to my mom's book club,
There you go.
because they'll read anything.
Right.
And so I want to see what the feedback from that is
Oh, I would
like.
love to hear that. Yeah, I would love to hear that. So, I mean, I've given it to a lot of people in my peer group that are not seniors, but older people and boomers. I get some neg I mean, as you know, it's kind of an anti-negative. It's an anti-government book, an anti-Fed book. It's a little edgy. I don't pull any punches. I think what they've done is wrong, and they
That's
know it.
evil.
Yeah, it really is. I think that, and I say it. And so I've had some people say, "Well, I really don't like that tone. You should be more respectful to Ben Bernanke." And I'm like, "No, I shouldn't."
Yeah, I'm not going to be respectful toward, who is it, Lauren Summers,
Yeah, right.
like human trafficker, right?
Yeah, right. I
Why
mean, it's
would I
just
be?
like, yeah. I mean, I feel like you kind of got to call them as you see them, and I present, and it's not. I'm not just yelling at them. I'm presenting evidence. I'm presenting things they said, and then I'm comparing what they said to what actually happened. And showing how in so many cases they're just terribly wrong. And the notion that we can have a bunch of people sitting in a Federal Reserve building with around a table, 12 of them, saying this should be the cost of money, it just makes no sense. I mean, it's like the Soviet Politburo saying this should be the cost of grain. Well, they ended up having surpluses or shortages. The cost of money should be set by the balance of savings and investment opportunities, period. It should be a market set price. The fact that it's not market sets caused all the problems. I mean, Volcker took it to 20% and almost bankrupted my dad in 1980. And then now more recently it went to 0%, which created this whole new class of quintillionaires who levered the hell out of their hedge funds and their PE operations, and they made billions and billions of dollars while the rest of us were paying higher prices for everything. So it's a broken system. And what we need, and I guess the reason I put the edge and the anger in there is I want to get people fired up. I want them to read it and go, gosh, he's right. These people really have been taking advantage of us. The system really is unfair. I'm not just imagining that I'm being screwed. I am being screwed. And that's bad.
Yeah,
But then
this
it's
imaginary enemy that I've been
it's
envisioning as the result of all my problems isn't imaginary anymore. I
not
have a
imaginary. It's
tangible enemy.
subtle. It's subtle because, they gaslight you. I mean, I listened to the most recent Jerome Powell speech. And he kept saying over and over again, we are doing what we were in our mission to fulfill the needs and wants and the best interests of the American people. And I just wanted to puke. I just absolutely wanted to puke because it's total gaslighting. No, he's not. He's protecting the banks and the large financial interests, period, full stop. So, once people understand it, hopefully then what'll happen, the next step, Joe, hopefully, and I pray, is that they'll start reading about it, understanding, getting into it, protecting themselves by buying Bitcoin and gold. And then they'll get politically active. And so the next time we have an election and some politicians came around, like this time, I mean, Trump embraced Bitcoin, so did RFK. We'll have some sound money politicians running for office saying, hey, folks, it's really not all this other blue-red stuff that we're thinking about that's a problem. The problem is the money's broken. We got to go back to sound money. And that person will, having read my book, understand that he's right or she is right and vote for him. And, because. The optimistic part of the book is that, and I've seen this. I was on the phone with a guy yesterday, or on a pod with a guy yesterday who lived in Argentina. And as a kid, he went through the hyperinflation of 1990 and 91. And he said it was really amazing. Like, the thing was so messed up. My mother was working her ass off. She'd buy groceries the minute she got her paycheck. Everything was getting. And they said one day the currency completely collapsed. They came in and they announced that we were going to go to a currency, we were going to go to a dollar-based currency. And the dollar wasn't perfect, but it was a lot sounder than the Argentinian currency at the time. And he said it was amazing. Within 6 months or a year, everything got so much better. Just returning to a sound form of money makes life better. And I think that same thing would happen here, but people need to see it. They need to envision it. They need to understand it. They need to dream of it because that's where we got to get to make, to fix America. I mean, America's broken. That's one of the first chapters. I say America's broken. I give the evidence. We got to fix it, and we're going to fix it by going to sound money.
Amen. Amen. Absolutely. It's something that I pray for too. Namely that people will be able to identify the problem first and foremost, and that can only happen through education, and things like that can only happen through a book like yours.
Yeah.
So I thank you very much for writing it.
Well, thank you. I mean, I felt like I had to write it. I just, I
After
was.
years of watching Fed meetings and hearing them,
Yeah,
gerrymander, you probably got sick to your stomach and
I
said,
just
I've got to set
exactly.
this
I
thing
mean,
straight.
it was just kind of like, God damn it, somebody's got to say this. It's, I know it to be true, and I'm in a situation where I understand it. It really was, I mean, it's kind of a life's work that I'm now in a position where I watched it all go down because I'm 67. I lived through all these cycles. I saw each move, and every one of them was disgusting. And then, frankly, I was kind of demoralized before Bitcoin came along because gold really wasn't doing the job. They'd figured out how to manipulate it. There was a lot of paper gold, and this is just going to go on forever. And then Bitcoin entered the scene, and it was like, "Ooh, this is interesting. They can't manipulate this so easily. We could see it." And then I got, then I started going to conferences. And I meet all the guys your age who are like quoting von Mises and, the Bitcoin standard. And I'm like, oh, this is great. And we've got all us old, fuddy-duddy gold bugs. We're conspiracy theory guys. We got reinforcements, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's the older generation who are the gold bugs. Conspiracy theory is a, demeaning term for my generation. Now, seeing it all unfold, conspiracy theorist has become a term of endearment.
It really should
Yeah.
be. I mean, it's like, what is it? What is, I said, like, conspiracy theory just means you were right. Yeah.
9 times out of 10, absolutely. I have a couple questions on
Sure.
tariffs, and thank you so much for the wonderful, synopsis of your book, The Reason Behind It, and that fervor and passion. We need it. I share it. And I love it. And hopefully my mom's book club will
Yeah, I'll
have it
be
after
very
I give it to
interested to
them.
hear. I'll be
Yeah,
very
yeah,
interested. I'm sure some
yeah.
of them will like it. Some of them probably won't.
Yeah. I have a feeling they will. They're a bunch of, fiery Irish,
Oh.
Bostonian Irish
Although
ladies,
they
so
might like it. Yeah,
yeah.
it might be okay. Yeah,
Yeah.
if statists don't like it. People who believe in the government don't like it. They think it's I'm too harsh on the government.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But the Irish men and women, around Boston, Irish,
Yeah,
Italian,
no, I get
Scottish,
it.
you
Yeah,
know it.
I'm
Yeah.
married to an Irish woman, 100% Irish, Susan Foley, and yeah, no, they suffered a lot at the hands of the Brahmins when they first came over, so she gets it.
Oh yeah, that inherent level of skepticism toward,
Correct, towards
higher
the
power.
powers that
Yeah,
be, yes.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of this tariff formula, people seem to have really easily figured out what it is. It's essentially just the nation's trade deficit. You take their exports as the denominator. You take the trade deficit, you divide it by the exports, and then that is what we are charging them, right? And so in that sense, and another per or it's actually what we're it's that divided by half, right? Because on the slide it's called a discounted reciprocal tariff. I saw Stack, he has said that this was bad branding, and it's because what we're really trying to do is basically take the deficit that they're running with us and charge them that deficit right back, or
Right.
half that deficit right back.
Right.
And so do you think that better branding for this would have been something
Yeah,
like
I don't
the
know.
deficit elimination plan or something like
Yeah,
that?
I don't know. I mean, I love Stack. He's great. Stack Hodler on Twitter, and I retweeted that tweet where he described it. I'm not entirely sure I agree with it. I mean, it's you got to remember this is politics, and a lot of politics is optics. And there are others who kind of came out and said this is really brilliant because what it makes people realize. It makes Trump look beneficent and fair, because what he's kind of saying, okay, you're going to tax us, you're going to tariff us at 60%. Well, we'll tariff you. We won't come back at 60%. We'll come back at 30. We'll give a 50% discount. So, and all these numbers are kind of made up because the tariff really isn't the 60%. That's really the amount of the deficit, reflected in the form of a tariff. Correct? I mean, what it would take to correct it. So there's a little bit of sleight of hand, a little bit of branding, and a little bit of, just spin on the part of the Trump administration to make it look like, hey, these guys are treating us unfairly, and we're going to show how magnificent we are. We're not going to treat them entirely unfairly, but we're going to treat them half as unfairly as they've treated us. And so, okay, I mean, that's fine. And I think, to the average American who doesn't really dig into it, that's a pretty compelling pitch. So. I don't know. Look, at the end of the day, it just is what it is. We're basically pushing back hard on countries that have taken us for granted. And I think that's appropriate. It's very much appropriate.
Absolutely. It's about time, and I'm very happy that the politicians we elected on a specific platform to lead us are enacting that platform and doing it quickly.
Yeah.
Basically, as far as I recall, everything that Trump has spoken about during his campaign, he has set in motion in the first 100 days. So
Yeah,
whether
I
it's
agree.
the ICE mobilization, the SBR, the tariffs, he's begun all of it, and he
Yeah.
hasn't even been off in 100 days. It's
Well,
refreshing to see something
yeah,
like
freed
this.
Ross Ulbricht. I mean, yeah, all
Yeah.
of it. He's met his commitments, and then Doge went after USAID, which is a beautiful thing. It's interesting. I'm not quite sure what's going on with Elon. It looks like he might be on the outs. I mean, I
I
always.
think it's because non-government employees, I read somewhere, they could only be there for 136 days, half a year. And so because of that, he's being furloughed. And then next year, he will come back in the same capacity to kind of be there for the final push of Doge.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a decent explanation. So, he is trying to live up to his mandate as best he can. And I respect him for doing that. Again, you and I discussed, this will be messy. And the medicine may not taste very good. But I think that, I know, for example, I'm very happy that the border issue has been addressed. I mean, that was a huge issue and was just being completely ignored by the other side. So, there's a lot of good stuff going on. And what I do, I think I expressed it earlier, I do worry that if we don't see improvement in the end of four in their cycle, that, in a fourth turning, that, the less than intelligent American voter, average American voter, might just say, might fall to the siren song of the other side and say, not good enough, we're throwing you out, we'll try them again.
Because when the waves are crashing against the side of the boat, even though, the siren song is a mermaid that wants to kill you, it sounds pretty good.
It sounds
when you're
pretty
in the middle
good.
Of a
that's
storm.
That's exactly right. I mean, Ulysses got suckered into it and we could too. So you just don't know where this is going to go. But look, it's a definite step in the right direction. And, another thing I was really pleased to see, I was pleased to see him get mad at Putin. I mean, everyone thinks he's in Putin's pocket. He's not in Putin's pocket. He's trying to cut a good deal over getting that war to end. And if Putin's not willing to play ball with him, he'll get mad at him. And I think that's great. And I'm guessing sometime within the next year, they will solve that problem, that they will figure out what to do with that, and that'll end.
Yeah.
So I view that as a net positive too.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a very interesting couple of years, and it has, a lot of implications for gold and Bitcoin. I mean, we didn't talk about it much, but one of the reasons why I'm absolutely convinced we are really in it right now in terms of what I call the sovereign debt crisis was just the relentless upward motion of gold. I mean, gold was up 50% in the last year.
Yep.
From 2070 to, 3150 or until it, today I think it's down $70 or something, but as a result of, when you have an event like what just happened and the markets go down, we've got a very strong possibility of all correlations going to one, where everybody sells everything because they're margin calls. And we still have a fairly highly leveraged system. And that's shown, by the work that James Lavish did on the basis trade, and the way they're talking about putting a line of credit in to back up the hedge funds that are in the basis trade to help buy the treasury bonds. It's going to be a chaotic environment. And what I counsel all of my clients to do is to own things the government can't print. And they can't print Bitcoin, they can't print gold, they can't print real estate. I put real estate at the bottom though, because they can tax it and they will. But I think that's your best defense mechanism through all of this turmoil and to not get shaken out of it. In a correlation of one event, I remember March 2020, Bitcoin and gold got badly hammered in the beginning of that downturn. And then, of course, Powell came in with his fire hose and they quickly recovered and went screaming to new highs.
Yeah, we went from 10K to 3K in Bitcoin. And then the title of your book, we had a big print.
The big print, right. And the title of the book is The Big Print. It's interesting. I was very afraid I wasn't going to get it out before the next one occurred. and so I kind of rushed to get it out, and a couple of typos in there that are angering me, but we'll get the revised edition out without the typos. But, we've already had two big prints. We had one in 08, and then we had another bigger one, in 2020. And all I'm saying is this pattern will continue, and I think the next one will be bigger than either of those two.
Absolutely.
So it's coming, and I don't know when, though. A lot of people say, tell me when. I don't know. I'm pretty sure within a two-year window.
Absolutely.
Maybe a lot sooner, but certainly within 2 years.
Given the, I think that, and I too fear that this kind of like this, attempted removal of the tumor won't be complete. The aftermath of that won't be complete within 4 years. I think the idea behind doing it quickly was, to your point, making it so that hopefully by the midterm, at the very latest by the next election, this will be done with. I think Trump also did this strategically, not just looking at prior presidents, but also understanding that he cannot get another term. He doesn't need to run for re-election again. He may be setting JD potentially up for failure in the event that these things aren't completed and we're not on the road back to prosperity 4 years from now. But I do think this was a strategy, Trump basically saying, look, it's my last time here. I'm going to do everything that I can to make sure that we kind of right the ship.
A journey of 10,000 miles starts with one step, and we've been going in the wrong direction. And here's a guy who had the guts to step up and declare that to be the case, ran for it on that, and I was living up to his promise, and he's taking us in the other direction. And Is this going to be a hard journey? Yeah, probably. I mean, probably. But, and this is where it's really, in my view, it's very important for him to message this to correctly, to explain it correctly, to not be amateurish about the way they, they walk through what they're doing. Because I was at a meetup last night, a Bitcoin meetup, and as I said, I think Americans can endure pain and change. I mean, we've obviously endured it for our whole history of the country, but we endure it much better when we think it's fair, you know what I mean? And we understand the plan. I mean, if you think about what they went through in World War II, my grandparents told me about it. I mean, there was severe rationing, and there wasn't enough gasoline, there wasn't enough, food. I mean, you couldn't get meat easily unless you wanted to buy it on the black market and so forth. And yet the country pulled together, realizing that if they didn't do it, they were going to lose to fascism, and they didn't want to do that. And Americans can do great things, but they need to feel, the fundamental problem that started this whole fourth turning was the unfairness of the bailouts in 2008. And that's, I think that's what really started. I think that's been underplayed. I talk about that a lot in the book, where all the anger came from. Look, Americans work hard. Americans are smart. Americans, they get it. We found, this is not Europe where we think we're entitled to shit. I mean, people here are willing to work, but they also aren't stupid, and they don't want to be cheated, and they want to think that the game is a fair game. And the problem is the game has become an unfair game, and they know it. And but we can get back to where it's a fair game again. And in the process, if there's a lot of pain to be endured, as I think as long as people think it's fair, we'll endure it until we get back to this new sound money system. So
Absolutely.
I'm quite optimistic about it, but I think that's one of the most important parts of the messaging that they've got to continue to do if they want to keep everybody on side with all this change.
Of course, it's all about know, if Americans can know why this is happening and where we're heading as a result of this happening, then I think they'll be much more willing to endure it, right? When, for example, like these transient one-off events, bird flu, kill half the birds, egg prices rise. People don't know why that's happening, they riot. Right now, with these tariffs, if the Trump administration were to come out and say, "Hey, you've been cheated for decades, especially since 2008. Your savings have been pillaged." And I have a feeling that this messaging has a higher chance of happening than ever before. We have Bitcoiners working in his cabinet. The person who's leading the SBR team is like an avid Bitcoiner. He's a young dude, family man, avid Bitcoiner. And so I think that the chances of this messaging of, look, you're being cheated. You've been cheated for decades, especially in the last 2.5 decades. We're here to help. There's going to be a lot of pain initially. But the idea here is we want other countries to pay up instead of you paying up. We want to stop printing all this money to fund ourselves. We want other countries to fund the United States. And we want you to live your life as prosperous as can be. But in order to get there, we need some pain. And that's what we're experiencing right now. But if you can endure it, then you'll be all the more prosperous on the
There's a
other
much
side of this
better,
thing.
yeah, there's
Just
a much
trust
better
us.
future under this new system. I think that's exactly right. You did a very good job of summarizing. I think that's exactly what needs to happen. And as long as we can stick to that messaging, we'll get there. And as I say, the second half of the book's very optimistic. I'm extremely bullish on, America, the world, humanity, et cetera. I mean, technology's just done great things. I mean, we couldn't have even done this 10 years ago, right? Different parts
I
of the
would have had to drive
country.
over to your house and we would have to, sit down
Exactly.
and
Yeah,
write this
real
thing out.
time, broadcasting out to hundreds of
On
people,
the
whatever, blah,
radio.
blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, we just couldn't have done it. And so, the trend of technology and decentralization, the better information flows, people kind of waking up to the fact that, these big sclerotic organizations like the federal government have been mismanaged. I mean, we're going to fix it. I mean, it's, and but fixing it's not a straight line. It's a crooked line with pain and missteps and all the usual crap. But we'll get there. It'll get better. I mean, I'm quite bullish about the world that my kids and grandkids will live in. But I'm a little bearish about the next 5 to 10 years, I think. Or I not bearish, I would just say, brace yourself, because I think there will be turmoil. I mean, I've lived through 2008, I've lived through 2020, obviously you did too, 2000. I mean, I've seen this movie, and there's some, it's a roller coaster at times, as you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's turbulence, perhaps short-term pain for long-term
Exactly. That's
gain
exactly what it
can
is.
be adopted by the Trump admin
That's
if
exactly right. That's the right way to view it.
Fantastic. Well, Lawrence, I messaged you yesterday. You were game for it. We jumped on this kind of emergency podcast here, and I think We explained to the viewers kind of what's going on. We gave this message to them. Do you have any parting thoughts, whether it's about the current situation, where we're headed, about your book, before we leave viewers here?
No, I mean, I would just say, you know, obviously I'm selling books. I don't make that much money per book. My mission is to orange pill the whole world. And my mission is to get politically everybody on side with sound money. I think the book makes a really strong argument for why sound money will make our society better. And I believe that with every fiber in my being. And so I want everyone else to believe that so that we all move in that direction, because I think the country isn't doing well or is broken in some respects. And if we were on a sound money system, it'd be a much better country. So I just plead that if you see it, you'll pick it up, you like it, you know, pass it to a friend, recommend it, whatever. I mean, we've got to get a political movement going here, because as these events unfold, there may be, you know, the other side, and they probably want to make Stephanie Kelton the Treasury Secretary, and she's the MMT priestess who believes that we can print money to, you know, and there's no consequence from printing that money, which is just absurd, but that's what she believes. And, you know, she's an advisor to Bernie Sanders. And so, you know, that we don't want to go in that direction. That direction would be extremely painful. You know, we'd learn a very painful lesson. Then, of course, we go to sound money, but we don't want to have to go through hyperinflation to get there. You know, I would just say, let's just try and spread this message, because it's an important message. I mean, I believe it's a very important message.
Absolutely. Me as well. You know, we'll continue pushing it. We'll continue praying on it, and
exactly
continue getting this book in
do.
The hands of us.
You know, we each do the best we can. And collectively, if we all see it and believe in it, we'll get there. We'll manifest it. I mean, it's kind of comparable to the American Revolution. I mean, there was a small group of people who were like, this is screwed up. We don't want these guys running our country. You know, we can do it ourselves better. And in the beginning, you know, there were a lot of loyalists, and there were a lot of people who didn't even care. They were just kind of trying to live. But over time, the side that had the best idea prevailed, you know, and they built the Constitution, they built the country, and look at the country it became. It was a fabulous country until post-World War II, and then the decay kind of began, and now the decay is fairly substantial.
Yeah.
But it's not fatal. We can get back to where we were if we just clean up our act.
Absolutely. A handful of intelligent, convicted, and angry men can change the world, and that's what we're trying to do now.
I think that's exactly right, and that's what we're looking at, so... So I'm happy to have you in that camp and have you as a friend. And as I said, I'm going to send you a book and, you know, see you at the shows. I should just tell people I will be at BitBlock Boom this weekend. When are you putting this out, Joe?
This will be out immediately, so I'm going to go ahead and edit it.
Yeah, so I'm leaving this afternoon for BitBlock Boom, and then next week I'm at Cheat Code. I will be in Las Vegas at the Bitcoin show, and I will be in Prague. And anyone who bought a book and wants it signed, I'm happy to sign your book. So.
Phenomenal. Well, you heard the man. You know, if you are at any of those events, be sure to bring your copy of The Big Print.
Yeah, please do. I can't carry thousands of books around with me. I go to these people, are you selling books? I'm like, no. Sometimes I have a few, but I run out pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, bring your copy so you can get it signed. And Lawrence, it's been a pleasure. As
yeah,
always, thanks
thank
so much
you,
for talking
always
to me.
Always fun to talk to you.
All right. Talk soon.